you can lose a deal, but never lose a relationship. You have to always show the positive side, you know, because otherwise the seller's ability to take pressure is different than your ability to take pressure. So you have to keep on inspiring the sellers to go and perform.
Welcome. This is Zia here, and my guest today is Prasoon Saxena, president at NTT Data, a top 10 leader in IT and business services. Prasoon has seen it all and has great insights for all enterprise sales leaders today. Without further ado, let's get started. Hi, Prasoon. This is exciting. Thanks for joining. Appreciate that.
Hey, thank you, Zia. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, meet with you. Good to reconnect, and I'm looking forward to the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you. So Prasoon, just to set the things rolling, if you can tell us about your journey so far, talk to us about your professional journey, connect the dots for us, please.
Sure. So, I have experience over 25 years in the IT sector, mostly in the sales. I started as a sales executive way back in 1996 when I joined Wipro. And I was responsible for the telecom sector. So telecom, internet service provider, the wireless services, mobility was just taking off in India at that point of time. And I was hired as a sales executive to selling into those accounts. I had a good run for almost 3 years, 3.5 years, when one of the executives at Wipro called me and said, hey, do you want to try something new? I said, what is new? And this was joining a team that was going to run the sales in the Asia Pacific and Middle East business for the services business. And so I joined that team, and I was managing the e-commerce solutions and services sales in the Asia Pacific Middle East market. It was a great experience. I remember flying into a client in Kerala, trying to sell a portal deal and whatnot. So it was fun. And 2001, again, one of the executives at Wipro called me and said, hey, they are looking at establishing the business for the telecom service provider business in North America. Will I be open to relocating to the US? And I asked my wife, I said, what do you think? And we were expecting our first child. And she said, yes. I called my parents. They said, yes. And I thought I'll be just going in for 3 years. But here we are, spent 20 years plus in the US. So I was managing telecom service provider sales. 9/11 happened. And then, if you remember, there were scandals, like the Quest financial scandal or MCI and Enron, whole bunch of scandals happened, and telecom service provider business really got impacted. And I had a couple of years of, very challenging time to meet my plan, meet my quota. But the leadership was very supportive. And then I started opening some accounts, and, it had a good run until 2008, when I started feeling like, this is enough. I want to go and do something else in life. Again, I had a call from another executive at Wipro and said, hey, we are going to sign a contract with General Electric, and it's zero revenue, very competitive field. Would you like to take the responsibility of a global CE job? And I said yes to that. For 2.5 years, I ran that account. Very successfully. We had a good growth in 2.5 years, nice and profitable. And profitable word is kind of a question mark when you're handling GE account, but it was nice for us. And 2011 is when, again, one of the executives called me and said, enough of managing General Electric. I want you to do something else. And I was made responsible for the sales for Wipro's manufacturing high-tech business. I ran it for a couple of years, and then they said, we will take out all the existing accounts from you, go and establish a new logo engine hunting. And I took over the responsibility. I basically established their new logo. And I had the opportunity and privilege of working with you, Zia, in that team. And a good run, you know, good run for 2 years. And again, I was like, okay, I want to go and do something else now. And I got a call from Dell Services to lead the manufacturing sector globally. I took the responsibility. I joined them. And 2 years, was it 2016? When Michael Dell decided to sell the services business to NTT Data, and I transitioned into NTT Data, and here I am now responsible for all of manufacturing business at NTT Data Services. So if I look at back my career, you know, 25 years or so, one thing that worked for me has been that I've taken chances, right? I've never been happy, or I should say, not satisfied all the time. You know, you have to always look for your next challenge. What's the next challenge? And I always took some chances. I always took some risk. I remember when I took the GE account, you know, guys were like, why are you taking that? You know, you are setting yourself for failure. Or when I was going to run the hunting for Wipro, you know, everyone said, hey, why are you doing this? When I was joining Dell Services, you know, Dell is into hardware. Why are you taking that job, right? NTT Data, no one has heard of them. Now a lot of people know about NTT Data. But at that point, why are you joining NTT Data? So I have taken my chances and it has paid off quite well, Zia. So I'm very happy and satisfied with what I've achieved so far. But I'm not done. I'm going to keep trying to grow.
That's a great advice, Prasoon, right? You know, keep taking chances, keep questioning the status quo, I guess, right? So that's fantastic. So congratulations. That's a stellar career so far, Prasoon. And now you are the executive calling other folks, I guess, right? Instead of getting calls from the executives.
I'm always looking for good people, right? Good talent. And it's not easy to find.
I know. Yeah. That's pretty good. So I think just elaborating on that point where you said, you know, you're finding, looking for people, right? So when you're looking to hire someone, Prasoon, right? What are you looking for? What attributes do you really look for? And how do you kind of measure or, what do you do?
Number one is, you know, when I'm going and hiring in the market, number one I look for is the integrity and ability to establish trust. You know, yeah, in most of the people you talk to, you know, they're high on integrity, but ability to establish the trust with anyone for that matter is not easy, right? And that's very important to me, right? When you're talking to a client, the first thing you want to do is to establish the trust. I mean, I've seen you also in actions, yeah, you know, what you did with some of the accounts that we have pursued, you know, basically establish the trust, right? This is the number one most important thing. The second thing is passion to win. You know, are you passionate about what you're pursuing in a business or not? Are you passionate about your company that you represent? Are you passionate about the offerings, the solutions that you're taking to your customers? It's extremely important. Do you have passion to win? I mean, we are all a fan of cricket and you saw India winning against England yesterday. It was the passion to win, right? So that's the second thing. The third thing is the understanding of the market and some of the recent trends. I've spoken to some, like one person I interviewed last week, you know, very good on first two, but the third, he was a little lost on some of the recent trends on, say, analytics and digital and cloud. He didn't know. You know, I saw him more as a staffing T&M in a project-related work, but not good for being a strategic seller. I didn't find that. So those are the three things I look for. I mean, there are many other things, but those are the three things basically I look for, right?
How do you go about, measuring the trust factor, right? Their ability to quickly build trust. How do you, measure that? Similarly, how do you measure how passionate are these guys, the guys or gals that you interview?
Yeah. See, the trust is basically, you know, when you ask the question, you know, you have been in the industry for over 20, 25 years, right? You talk to them and try to understand, hey, how did you really go and win the deal? And we all know, Zia, dealing with multiple clients and multiple challenges in pursuing a deal, you know, what you really face. So when you interview a candidate, you want to make sure that candidate is coming across honest and also sharing with me openly about the challenges he or she faced versus painting a very rosy picture, right? I want to know the facts. I want to know the reality. I want to know where you get stuck. I want to know, you know, the failures, about your failures, and how did you overcome those failures, right? Talking about the customers, you know, and, you know, I'm not talking about the names as such, but, you know, giving names, references, hey, I work with this particular client, this type of customer, this is what I did, you know. So when you walk me through the specific details and specific scenarios, I can really make out, you know, whether you're genuine, whether you are, you have been able to establish the trust or not, right? So I always ask not the straight questions. I will always ask, you know, the ones which are into the details of it, saying, how did you do this? What happened, you know, when you lost a deal? You know, how did you really, what are the steps you took kind of stuff?
In today's world, right, I mean, what do you feel are the key attributes of a successful enterprise salesperson now, Prasoon? I mean, obviously, trust and integrity is something the clients also see. But outside of that, what do you think someone needs to be the key attribute for someone to succeed now?
I think number one thing I look at is ability to read the situation and politics in the account, right? So assuming that, you know, the individual has the integrity, has the ability to trust the account establish the trust with the client, whether he or she is able to understand the situation and understand the politics in the account. We all know in sales situation, you know, the politics play an extremely important role. You know, where is the power center? Who is going to really spend the money? Who are the detractors? You know, a lot of times, you know, you go for a meeting and you will see, you know, everybody kind of nodding the head, and you will still lose the deal. So I always ask the difficult questions, the yellow flags and the red flags. You know, where is your red flag? Where is your yellow flag? And what are you doing about it? So what I have established in our businesses, you know, some of the Covey best practices, Franklin Covey best practices, where, you know, you simple template you follow and you look at the yellow light and red lights, and it's like a formula. When you answer some questions, you know, it'll pop up your whether your deal is yellow or red and where you are yellow and red. And then you basically deep dive and you coach the seller, right? But I always look for a seller, you know, who can read the situation and understand the yellow and red lights. You know, so for me, the individual who can do it is the perfect seller in my mind, right? But, you know, we know that it's not always the case. So we are willing to coach. Second thing I look for is whether he or she is coachable or not, right? The typical headstrong individuals, I think they won't be able to scale in the organization. That's the second thing. The third thing I look for is their ability to pick the right team, right pursuit team for the account. You know, pick your team, you know, whether not just the competency, but, you know, will they be able to gel well with the client or not? So I would say, you know, those are the four things I basically look for in the enterprise seller, right? Whether A, you know, can he or she read the situation, the politics in the account? B, ability to understand the red lights and yellow lights. Three, you know, ability to pick the right team for the account.
And also, not to digress, but I think also an ability to send dessert to your competitor team would also be.
That was fun. Exactly. So yeah, no, I agree with you. I think understanding your competition is also extremely important, right? And who is who there.
So Prasoon, you know, things of course have changed. Would love to understand your perspective on what you feel are the top challenges currently faced by the sales teams, and what is your advice for them how to overcome those challenges?
And I would say in last 18 months or 20 months, you know, how and what you sell to the customers have changed drastically, it's just 180 degrees, right? And we typically, a lot of us, you know, who come from an outsourcing business, you know, we approach outsourcing. Our approach has always been, hey, you know, let's go and find some outsourcing deals, right? But the way outsourcing deals are being constructed has changed completely. So, you know, we are about to, you know, sign a contract with a customer, very large. And, you know, there was an incumbent, and this incumbent has been offering, you know, services, meeting SLAs, you know, everything is green. You know, the few challenges here on the delivery, et cetera. But I think where what they forgot was, hey, you have to now transform. But the customer's expectations are changing. It's a lot more transformative, a lot more business-oriented. Outside the CIO organization, you know, how many more relationships you are building? I was with a client last week with one of their presidents of one of the business units of the customer. In fact, I also met with one of the CEOs of the company last week. And the conversation is not about how do I cut my cost in IT, but how do I transform my business? How do I monetize my analytics? Or how do I monetize my data? Right. So the discussions are happening at a different level, and that's where the spend is happening. So this guy basically said is that 70% of the discretionary spend is coming from their presidents of the business units, not from IT. Yes, IT will enable it, but are you understanding the business problem of the customer or not? And typically, you know, you talk to many sellers, they are very comfortable selling to a IT organization, director of infrastructure, director of application services, maybe to the CIO, right? But not comfortable to have a conversation with a president of e-commerce, for example, or president of one of the business units. You know, how do we make them more successful? And that's what you know I'm looking for when I go and look for salespeople, saying how many such conversations you have had, and I track that metrics. So I clearly see there's a discomfort with many of the sellers to have those conversations, and how do you create an opportunity from there? So it's not about, you know, posting two bodies there, but how do you take it from having that conversation to creating a large transaction? So coming back to the point I was making earlier with this customer, this incumbent, you know, offering ITO application support and whatnot, but they forgot that, you know, the customer's business has changed in 18 months and they have cash, you know. They have significant cash in the bank, and on the run operations, you know, they want the cost cutting, they want productivity, they want bot, they want automation, they want modernization. But how are you going to take them to cloud? How are you going to use the power of analytics? How are you going to help them with this improving their inventory turn? How are you going to improve the supply chain? And, you know, all these areas are connected. And I think the typically the sellers, they struggle in connecting those dots. And those who can are highly paid. I can guarantee you that. So it's very consultative selling. It's very business consulting led sales now versus, oh, I'm good in outsourcing deals. I'm good at selling a digital workplace. You know, that practice-based selling is not going to work.
I agree. Yeah, and if you remember, right, for many years now, we have been saying that the spend is moving towards business. But like you rightly said, over the last 18 to 24 months, it has been accelerated, right? Like, you know, you're saying 70% in your client situation is coming from business. That's awesome, yeah.
Absolutely. So there's a customer I was talking to, you know, they make, without getting to the details, but basically, their products are used in a home construction, and in pandemic they have done really well. And I said, you certainly have accelerated your spend, and you know, we are thinking like, how are we getting all these deals, you know, from left, right, and center, and a lot of discretionary spend. And you know, his answer was that, hey, Prasoon, you know, next 2 years or so, we don't know how long, you know, this trend will continue, but we want to maximize what is out there in the market for next 2 to 3 years. So they are going all out and investing into technologies so that they can maximize their revenue and profits.
So that brings me to two questions that I wanted to cover later, but, you know, this is perfect, the perfect time to do that. You know, what is your advice to sales heads to ensure that they enable that their sales teams are, you know, kind of stepping up and doing this kind of selling, right? What is your advice to sales heads in general, and how should they focus on this?
So first, hire the best talent, right? So easier said than done, but the biggest mistake a lot of sales heads make is that they hire the wrong talent. And then after 1 year, they are put on PIP. And they said, oh, you know, I met my, this person was not performing and I put them on PIP. Shame on you, right? And that's what I tell my sales heads, saying, it's shame on you. You didn't hire the right person and you are putting them on PIP. I mean, see how, you know, we work together. I hardly put anyone on PIP because I think we had the best team, right? So similarly, you know, have enough scrutiny when you are hiring someone, because you're not only, you know, going to hire a wrong person, but you're also going to screw up somebody's career. Maybe that individual was good for some other company, but don't screw around with the career of people. And once you have hired, make them successful, inspire them, coach them, put them through the training, but make sure you hire the best talent. The second issue is coaching, right? Because, oh, I had the best sales guy and now I expect the sales guy to go and perform and I'm going to report my numbers to my executive team and I met my numbers. No, I don't need the managers. I don't need the managers. I need the true leaders who will coach their team. What are the coaching tools you have? How are you making sure that your team is updated on the newer technology, the recent trends? I invite, in my town halls, I invite some of the customers to come and talk. In a ground reality, what's happening on the ground? You know, there's a lot of BS out there about digital and whatnot, but what's real? You know, where are the customers spending? What are the customer pain points? How do you create an environment for seller to succeed? Right? It's extremely important. So when I say coach, it's not like, hey, you know, one-on-one coaching. It's like, how do you create that environment? How do you create a training environment? How do you bring some of the customers to come and talk to you? You know, how do you get your alliance partners, SAP, Googles of the world to come and talk to you and give you some ideas on how to succeed in the market? And third, inspire them. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you lose deals and I've been in the industry, there are people who I've coached where they lost deals and they said, oh man, we lost this deal. And, you know, there were some of the leaders were all upset with, you know, one of the guys. And I'm like, it's okay. You can lose a deal. You tried hard. You can find it's you lost a deal. You can lose a deal, but never lose a relationship. You have to always show the positive side, you know, because otherwise, the seller's ability to take pressure is different than your ability to take pressure. So you have to keep on inspiring the sellers to go and perform. And it has worked all the time.
That's it, right? That's the job description of a leader, right, that you just laid out. Another point when you were talking about the customer, you know, one of your customer examples that came to my mind was, so Prasoon, obviously, you know, maintaining and building a relationship with CXOs is key, right? What are your best practices? How do you do that?
You always look for an opportunity to connect with the CXOs. Look, CIOs are, in my mind, not that difficult. You know, when we all being in IT sector, working for a large IT corporation, it's not that difficult to get the CIO meetings and connecting with them. You know, the challenge is always, you know, how do you really build relationship outside of the CIOs and the CEOs and the CFOs and the CTOs, right? So you know, I've challenged myself. I've challenged my team to go and build relationship outside of the CIO organization. Basically, most of the executives that you'll find in the industry, they're very simple people. You know, it's not overly complicated. You know, they're not looking for, hey, what's the happening in cloud stuff and what's happening in the digital experience. You know, that's a lot of BS, right? When you go and meet with them, I mean, the CEO I met last Friday, in fact, over Zoom, we are talking about simple issues that he has because, you know, I read through his analyst briefings and I basically have a chat with him saying, hey, what are you doing on the supply chain side, for example? And, you know, he had looked at supply chain strategy, vendor consolidation, all that cool stuff. But I think he missed out on the technology aspect of it. And I brought in the technology aspect. I said, what if we talk about this and it can probably help you with improving your supply chain resiliency. Then you talked about, I was with a fairly large automotive supplier in the Indy 500 event. You know, we are, you know, the prime sponsors of the Indy 500 race. And I was with the CXO of fairly large automotive, you know, spending time 2.5 days actually with him and his wife. And so they have a good product, but what they lack is the digital experience. And so talking about in last 18 months, you know, how the market has shifted, you know, so as a consumer, I'm looking for that experience. I'm not looking for a product. I'm not looking for a cell phone. I'm looking for all the nice applications that go around it. So that was the conversation. So, you know, there's always one simple thing. You never make a pitch. You know, I hate that word, making a pitch. You're having a conversation. You're not making a pitch. You know, I've seen our sellers, sometimes they're saying, oh, here is the pitch for our CXO meeting. I said, I do not want that pitch. I want to understand what are his or her pain point. Where is this company struggling? Where are the opportunities? What are the unknown areas that they have not really tapped into? And then I look for, you know, this is like our Venn diagram that is studied in third or the fourth grade, right? You look for the common areas, saying where our company entity can help and where they have the gap. And basically you talk through it, right? You talk about issues and then you come up with the opportunities and then it, you know, results into something and then it results in a workshop and then it results in a deal. When you're having the conversation, you're talking about their pain points, you empathize with them, you talk about most of these customers, they want to connect with you because you understand the market. You understand what the other executives are talking about. You know, they want to use you as the sounding board. So you can kill the meeting by making a pitch. In the first 10 minutes, the meeting will be over. He or she will never meet you again. I can guarantee you that. But when you're having a conversation and be genuine and honest about it, you will make that connection.
I think the very important word that you said there again was come across as, be genuine, right? You know, that's the most important point. That's awesome. So thanks for sharing that, Prasoon. Of course, we all have, like you said, right, some deal losses. And we probably learn more from a deal loss than actually winning a deal, right? And anything that you can share, some of the learnings from your recent deal losses would be awesome.
I always say, you know, you never lose. Either you win or you learn. In any deal that you're pursuing, you know, always have a long-term view. If you lose this, then what's the next thing for us, right? So I'll start with a deal that we almost lost and now we won. So, you know, this is a customer, the incumbent, you know, had a whole bunch of assets and whatnot, you know, so they were kind of stuck to them, right? But they were not able to provide the transformative approach to the customer, and this customer was tired of dealing with them. The only way they were looking at, you know, keeping the contract was through the contract hook, you know, the paper that they have signed, you know, the legal way of kind of managing, and never works long term. So, but there were some reasons why they couldn't terminate the contract, and they said, you know what, we want to stay with the incumbent. Sorry, you lost the deal. And our seller came back and said, you know what, they're going to stay with the incumbent. A deal is lost for us. I said, okay, no problem. I just reached out to the executives in the company and to their executives in the company. And I said, if you like the services, stay with them. I'll support you. Make sure you have everything from our side. We want to be your partner. And, you know, in long term, we're looking from a long term perspective. I always give this analogy of tennis. I started playing a serious tennis 9 months back. So when I start planning, I used to go for winners. You know, I'll go for a shot that the opponent can't take and I'll win the point. But it's difficult to have those winners. Rather, you want to make sure you're throwing the ball back at the court again. You know, just keep on playing, rally till the opponent gets tired. And I think that's what we did. Competition made a mistake. So very classic example of, you know, hey, you never lose hope. You know, you never lose a relationship. You can lose deals. Just stay on it. You know, you'll win the next one. Whenever the next one happens, they're going to call you. Show your intent to them. There's another deal we lost. I would say, you know, it was not a well-managed deal for us, where it's a $2.5-3 billion company. The customer was a $2.5-3 billion company. As you know, NTT is a very large corporation. The sales team was, our team from Europe was basically managing it. And they got on a call with this customer, and I was on the call with them. Number one, there was a lady CIO, and we had all men. So that was number one mistake. Now, number two mistake was we talked too much about the size of our company and how, you know, the work we do with some of the big corporations, the Fortune 100, Fortune 50 companies, and Fortune 10 companies. And I knew that we were wrong. At that point of time, I knew we were going to lose the deal. Because at the end of the presentation, I asked them, do you have any questions? And the response from their side was, we are overwhelmed. So I knew the answer. You know, you don't do that to the customer, right? I mean, you have to connect with them culturally and make sure that they're important, right? Not. So I think most of the time we do a good job. You know, you don't, but, you know, we do make mistakes in the sales process. And, you know, from our perspective, you know, this is like a big thing. You know, we are a big company. We do all this cool stuff, right? And here is the customer who's talking about, hey, you know, we got a basic problem. You know, how are we going to solve the basic problem? So understanding the pain points, understanding the culture aspect of it, making sure that you're connecting, and then you go from there.
Yeah.
Right? You have to win every step in every step.
Yeah, every touch point has to be excellent. And very important point you brought up, Prasoon, was about the culture fit, right? I on this same podcast, I have interviewed, senior executives from, say, Corning, Stanley Black & Decker, Amtrak, WNET, you know, many, many companies like that. And each one of them have spoken about culture being one of the things that they look for when they're selecting their partner. So that's a great point.
Absolutely.
So deal loss, you have a deal loss and all that. But also very importantly, you spoke about inspiration, motivation and all that. So Prasoon, I'd love to know, how do you handle a down day when you hit a slump? What do you do? How does Prasoon handle it?
So, you know, I think I've learned the hard way over the last 10 years or so, you know, on how to really manage our stress. See, if you're in leadership, you're expected to handle pressure. You're expected to handle the stress. I have learned how to turn off and when to turn off. So mentally, you know, as you know that, you know, I basically turn off at 5:30, 6 p.m. and I'm up at 4 a.m. in the morning. And when I turn off, I really turn off. I'm not on my mobile phone, not checking emails, and I need my time. When I'm every Saturday, Sunday, you know, I play competitive tennis now for my town. It's a good stress buster for me. I took all my frustration on the court, you know. But so I basically go out and play. That's my time. When I'm with my wife, my family, it's my family time or my wife's time. I think I've learned, you know, how to bucketize my time. And when I'm doing something, I'm doing well. And sometimes I have to just ignore certain requests coming my way or certain things. If it's not my priority, I'm going to ignore it. So I think I've learned that. I meditate. I play tennis. I keep my stress level low. So yeah, you know, I think a good work-life balance is also important. And look, this is just part of the job. You're going to have stress otherwise, you know, and you'll burn out pretty fast. I've seen people burning out, you know, not even touching 40s. They're like, okay, we are done.
So Prasoon, this has been great. So one final question, and that I ask all my guests is, you know, are you currently hiring in your team? And if you're hiring, for what roles, and what is the best way for someone to reach out?
Yes. So we are looking for sales talent. We have currently, you know, 7 open positions for sales executives, 1 for the client executive. It should be on our NTT Data website. You know, you can apply through that. You know, you can find out the details on the website on who to reach out, etc.
So there is a lot of good talent listening to this podcast, Prasoon. So hopefully you'll get someone. So that's pretty awesome. And as you know, people can also reach out to me. I'll be happy to make introductions into NTT Data. It's obviously a great company to work for. So that's good. So Prasoon, thanks again for taking the time today. Greatly appreciate that. Great advice. You know, looking forward to connect again on this particular topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Zia. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please do subscribe to the podcast, and I will greatly appreciate if you can leave a review. If you have any suggestions for future guests or any feedback, please write to me at zia@sellingtoenterprises.com. See you on the next episode. Thank you.